As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and on today's episode, we're talking CONCACAF Champions Cup. We're talking big signings in Dallas, D.C., and New York, smart signings in Seattle and Austin, and LAFC doing things. We're going to get into it. Joining me to talk about all that and much more is a man who has never been actively booed by thousands of angry fans in Hong Kong. It's Joe Lowry. Hi, Joe. Congrats on not being involved in Inter Miami's preseason tour.
It's crazy. I've already got the new business cards printing with that factoid about me. Yes, I've never been booed by thousands of fans in Hong Kong. In any context, soccer or otherwise, Taylor, I'm really proud of myself. Way to start the show off with a Joe win. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, man. You deserve it. Also flying under the radar, I believe, is DC United, who are doing their preseason tour in Saudi Arabia. And I think
Correct.
They're just using Inter Miami to soak up all that negative attention while they just do what they're doing and carry on with their business. Good stuff, DC United. I'm excited to talk about them later, I think. With us, as well, is a man who continues to pump coal into that Vancouver Island Whitecaps FC hype train. It's David Goss. You got them winning a playoff series. You've got them third or fourth in the West. When are you applying for Canadian citizenship, David?
I already did. That's why I got to grease the wheels right now. The train's already running down the tracks. Can I just tell a quick story? Because I think that's what everyone was waiting for.
Yes.
When I was a younger person and
I
used to go to basketball camp every summer. And as one of the big things, they would invite the Harlem Wizards to come. And the Harlem Wizards were like the Harlem Globetrotters, but the knockoff version.
But bookable. Yeah.
And they were the DC United in Saudi Arabia of like, oh, did you want to play Inter Miami and Messi? Well, we would come. How about you play us instead?
Oh, no. So, but like, at least you weren't getting the Washington Generals. Like, at least you were getting a Globetrotters knockoff that I'm assuming were semi-entertaining. Did you have aspirations, Goss?
No, because I couldn't spin the ball on a pen. That was like the big thing they did a million times with so many pens and so many balls.
In your basketball dreams, would you have preferred to be a Globetrotter or a member of the And-One mixtape tour?
Oh, come on, man. Hot sauce, 50 inches.
Escalade.
That was the... I used to come home from school and watch that every day. Don't even get me started.
That is the correct thing to come home and watch. Well done, Goss. Joe, any idea what we're talking about?
No, I always wanted to be a Harlem Wizards kid, personally, just like Goss. You know, got all the pens, got all the basketballs. That was my dream.
Well, Joe,
that does sound like your dream.
It does. It really does.
And did you see that? Add pens to make it nerdier. Yes, absolutely.
Did you see that Microsoft Excel is an esport now and there's a world championship that was just won?
No. Who would have seen that? What are you talking about?
1,000% I saw that.
What? That sounds like Joe's dream.
I didn't watch it. I saw it on social media and said, and nose exhaled and then kept scrolling. Taylor, that is the extent of my knowledge. Although, to be honest, I am kind of fascinated by that. I'm terrible at Excel.
Is that real or is that like a viral marketing
thing? No. It's 100% real. It's been going on for years. They give you like equations and financial models, and it's like who builds it quicker, more like, and obviously correct, starts and wins, and there's like rounds and stuff. The guy who won has won it back-to-back years, knocking off the LeBron James of Excel, who had won it 3 years in a row.
The winner gets to go work for Vanguard, I think is how this all works. Yeah.
The winner gets a job that they hate and $3,000 as a winning.
And a coupon to Staples. Did you refer to this as a sport, Goss?
It's an e-sport.
All right. Sure. Why not? Congratulations to Excel for being an e-sport. Congratulations to Joe Lowry for bringing the enthusiasm to made-up competitions. And with that in mind, let's talk CONCACAF Champions Cup, not CONCACAF Champions League.
That's
why did we rebrand?
Unreal transition from made-up sports to a CONCACAF competition.
Well, specifically the fact that it has a new title. Was CCL, is it not a league anymore? Is that why it is? Because we moved to the knockout bracket?
So I have so much time for this name change. It's going to take time. It's going to take time for me to remember it. And Taylor, props to you. You're one for one so far on this show. I don't know what my hit rate's going to be, but it's probably not going to be 100%. It was not a league before. It was not a league. I feel like Graham, who sort of, you know, even rails against at times, maybe I'm misremembering, but the concept of like MLS being a league because, you know, not everybody plays everybody. And that's a bit of a slippery slope. And I don't think Graham would even hold totally fast to that, but it wasn't a league. Like the barrier to entry for new soccer fans, especially in this region, is already high enough. We don't need to confuse them by calling a league or a cup competition a league. Like, it's a knockout tournament. That is what it is. American sports fans understand that. As, you know, this sport in the United States grasps for relevance, I have so much time for actually calling it what it is and going back to the CONCACAF Champions Cup moniker. Champions League over in Europe, you're next.
So
time is short.
Just to be clear, you and Graham by proxy, you start your debate about what is and isn't a league, not with the Champions League in Europe, which
I don't remember.
But with Major League Soccer, which is an actual league.
I don't remember what Graham said. I probably mischaracterized it, but I know Graham has taken umbrage with some of this league cup, you know, confusing title nonsense before, and I'm absolutely on board with that because it's stupid, and this is much better, even though it's going to take time to learn. I'm here for it.
I get your point a little bit on that. I think the obvious reason they, by the way, it wasn't Champions League in like 2010. So they rebranded around then to Champions League, which was clearly trying to connect to UEFA Champions League, which I think most people would say
failed.
Is the soccer competition that they are most familiar with in the world.
Also not a league, but sure.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think they were following that. It should be a Copa, right? Like it should be Copa CONCACAF or CONCACOPA or something like that. And it used to be called
Mario
Copa, the CONCACAF CONCACOPA. Yeah, let's keep going.
That's 1,000% someone you can beat in Mario Kart for sure.
What do we think? I'm going to assume that when they rebranded into the Champions League, there was some sort of existing Champions Cup that prevented them from going that route, so they had to go Champions League, and then everybody followed suit. All that to say, I'm fine with the rebrand. I'm fine with the expanded format. I'm very excited for it to be kicking off. I was not expecting that, but the more I read about it, I like the new format. I like how certain teams are entering at certain points, and I do think it's going to create some interest right away with games kicking off, what, today when we record on February 6th? Joe, how are you feeling on the enthusiasm meter?
Yeah, so I felt nothing prior to doing research just because I'm not all the way engaged yet, man.
Like nothing, Joe Lowry.
It feels like the offseason has been a blink and we're about to be tossed right back into the deep end. So I have sort of just, it's similar to my World Cup strategy in some ways, Taylor, of like, you know, just not thinking about how we're going to do it in 2026. That's sort of been my approach with CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. But getting deeper in and like looking at the bracket, I love a bracket, man. Who doesn't love a bracket? Mm-hmm. I am actually now kind of stoked for this tournament. The format is a little bit different. So very, very quickly, there is now 5 teams that get an automatic bye to the next round. There are then 22 teams that are
and
playing.
And they all won.
They all won something, right? You know, MLS, Liga MX, Leagues Cup.
Yeah,
things,
sure.
Right?
That was the one that stands out to me as being slightly not like the others. MLS Cup, Liga MX, Central American Cup, Caribbean Cup, and then Leagues Cup. It feels like maybe a way to get into Miami involved. Just
Taylor's
saying.
Living in the past on Leagues Cup. I honestly, I kind of get where you're coming from.
I know.
But you get all these teams then playing against each other, and then the 5 teams who got the first round bye, you know, will then match up against the teams that win the first legs. Like all this stuff makes sense, right? But the thing that maybe excites me the most, outside of some of the bracket fun, which I do think we'll get to in a minute, is the prize money. I don't know if you guys saw this, and I had forgotten about this when the initial announcement came out. The prize money is $5 million to the winner, which is not like UEFA Champions League level money, but it's like high for this region, very, very high for this region. The US Open Cup doesn't even sniff that. Leagues Cup, I believe, doesn't sniff that. the past versions of CONCACAF Champions League haven't sniffed that. Like, this is something new for this region, and I hope provides a little bit of jeopardy in a way that maybe this competition has somehow, or at least sometimes, lacked outside of the MLS versus Liga MX narrative.
Joe, to emphasize that one, a quick Google search tells me that the Seattle Sounders got about 500,000 when they won it in 2022, but I think the payout was a little bit different than that. So yeah, that is a pretty sizable difference. So do we think then that teams are going to be taking this more seriously? Or let me rephrase that. Are MLS teams going to be taking this more seriously? Or is it going to be we're in preseason mode, so we'll do our best, but we're not going too hard into this one? What do you think, Gus?
I think it'll be the same. Like, I don't, as great as the name changes, and I know everyone's going to get hyped for the first game when Joe comes out in a CONCACAF jersey and just does a full sprint around the field, I don't think there'll be any difference for most MLS teams, which is, I think, if you get far enough and it becomes winnable, now it's a thing you focus on and you start to get further into your season. But when I look at some of the, especially the MLS teams that are in this, where like Houston has Ache out with an injury, Cincinnati's got a bunch of changes made, Inter Miami, I don't think Inter Miami's going to risk Lionel Messi's health or Suarez's health because it's a CONCACAF Champions Cup match versus a league match, because there's, you know, a higher pot at the end of it or whatever. Like, they're going to treat it the way they're going to treat it, which I still think for a lot of teams is a massive competition. And I know, like, the Columbus front office is a lot of people who came from Toronto who desperately want to win this competition. I know Seattle was completely committed to winning this competition a few years ago. So that, in saying that, I don't think it's different. That doesn't mean MLS teams don't care. But I still think it's case by case of, like, where does it hit in your season? What does the road look like for you? For Philadelphia Union, they have a pretty good road in terms of competition. But they have to go to Costa Rica, which is the furthest trip you can make. Then they would potentially have to go to Pachuca at altitude and then Toluca at altitude. So that would be their first three rounds if Toluca were to get through as well. That's not an easy thing to do. So in that conversation, let's just say Ali Bedoya hasn't been around preseason maybe fully as the contract's getting done. Are you going to risk him in March because you want to win this? And I think Philly's a team that really is committed to winning this, and they've shown that in the past. But I think that question still stands, even with the new format and the new payouts and, of course, the shiny new name.
Of course. Is there a team, Goss, that you think is best positioned to sort of be able to go out of the gates and try to make a run? I look at somebody like FC Cincinnati, who've made some really smart moves, in my opinion, seem to have strengthened, still have plenty of question marks. I think you talked about them yesterday on Extra Time. But they do seem like a team that could theoretically make a run with some of the personnel they already have.
Yeah, I think Columbus is the obvious one. Columbus, they get a first round bye. They will play Houston or St. Louis in the second round, so they don't have to travel internationally. They might not have to leave they don't have to leave their time zone. So you get that far, and you're a team that has made one major addition and has lost like one technically major player, but coming out of MLS Cup, playing at their best all season right at the end, they should carry on, the hope is, to a pretty high level to start the year. And so to me, they're like the obvious ones. The big issue in all of that is they would match up against Tigres in the quarterfinals, who are one of the biggest clubs in the region. But at some point, you got to beat someone to win this thing. And so it might as well happen there.
Yeah, the bracket is fascinating to me here. And Goss, you kind of got to a little bit of that. There are 9 MLS teams in this competition through various pathways, MLS Finish, Leagues Cup, you know, Canadian Championship, etc. 9 teams, 7 of them are on the same half of the bracket. The only two that are not are the Philadelphia Union and the New England Revolution. On the side with the 7 MLS teams are included, in my mind, the top 3 favorites from Major League Soccer, Inter Miami, the Columbus Crew, and FC Cincinnati. On that side as well, Tigres and Monterrey, 2 of the top 3 teams in the Liga MX standings right now, 2 of the biggest clubs on this continent. You could almost not draw up a worse bracket from an MLS perspective.
Agreed.
For this competition to have your 3 favorites, along with 2 of the top 3 teams in Mexico, along with 4 other MLS teams, leaving the Union, who are going to be a good team in Major League Soccer this year, and the Revolution on the other side of the bracket, when neither one of those teams really has the top-end talent. Yeah, Taylor picked up on that, maybe. Neither one of those teams has the top-end talent to like really make you feel great about them doing it. Would I be shocked if the Union make a run to the final? No, I think they have a much more favorable half of the bracket the Revs would have to come through Club America if they do advance in this competition. They could get the job done too, right? But I don't think they're at the top of anybody's list on paper. But the bracket is so unbelievably bad for MLS. It makes me excited for the early round games. Like, we're going to get really interesting games in the quarterfinal, maybe even some of the round of 16 between some of these teams. Like, there's good stuff here. I just think from an MLS perspective, you're looking down the barrel of a competition that's probably going to have most of your top teams out, or all but one in the bottom half of the bracket done, you know, before you hit the final.
Joe, in terms of those interesting games in the first round, which ones are you sort of spotlighting, the ones that you're going to be paying attention to?
Well, the only MLS game happening this week, or a game involving an MLS team this week, is Vancouver versus Tigres, which is fascinating because the Whitecaps very much are the underdog there. The first game is in Canada. So there's a little bit of an edge there, but Tigres are still heavy favorites, according to the bookmakers.
They're playing on Vancouver Island, hence where Taylor changed the name of their team. They're moving stadiums for this game.
I hear you can change lots of names these days.
Yeah, for sure. All the tricks coming out of the bag, Joe.
I like it. You know, I like it.
Tigres is not going to be able to find Starlight Stadium. They're going to get lost. They're not going to be able to play.
Why are they doing that?
I think something's going on at BC Play. So they're playing at the CPL team, Pacific Stadium, which is one of the coolest looking atmosphere. It's like in the trees, in the mountains, on Vancouver Island. It looks amazing. So it'll be really cool.
What date is that game? I just now have to look and see what
this game
happening.
Is tomorrow. So that'll be February 7th between
which
and
just
Vancouver.
I don't want you to get confused because it's from CCL to CCC. That game is tomorrow, but then most of the other teams start in 3 weeks in this competition. They are randomly playing leg one of like three series this week, and then everyone else comes on board in about 3 weeks because you wouldn't want people to know when the games are and like watch them and consume them.
The only event that I can find is the BC Home and Garden Show from February 8th until February 11th. I don't know if that's what they
get
need
the grass
to prepare
ready,
for.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I thought Vinny Sartini was having a Nickelback concert is what I thought was happening, but I guess not. I mean, yes, there aren't a ton of fantastic round one matchups, like, and that's because this thing is seeded, right? So it's not like we're going to get Tigres Monterrey in the opening round, but I think especially the bottom half of the bracket with all those MLS teams in it and Tigres and Monterrey, like, that sets up very nicely for some really, really good clashes in the quarterfinals and the semifinals.
Do we think any of the big clubs, quote unquote, will be maybe out early? Like, I'm looking at Inter Miami. They played the winner of Nashville and Mocha, who are from checking their Wikipedia page, the Dominican Republic. Right. You both knew that off the top of your head because you're nerds. Could you see, let's say Nashville get past Mocha, could you see Nashville springing a surprise if Inter Miami continue to have some of the issues we've already alluded to?
Yep. I think that's kind of, that's where I am. Goss, I'm curious to hear where you are. Like, it feels all so unknown right now. You know, I think we all probably believe that Miami are just kind of waltzing their way through, not successfully, but through their preseason schedule. And that when Luis Suarez and these other guys want to turn it on, they probably will, but maybe not, right? And maybe they get hit in the mouth early on, and Nashville are probably a bad matchup for them to begin with. So, I don't know, guys. Almost anything feels in play with this competition, and that's kind of always the way it is.
I agree. I would add that with Inter Miami right now. Like, you could tell me, and I wouldn't be shocked, if Inter Miami is the best team in MLS history in 2024. They win everything. They blow the doors off teams. They win CCF or CONCACAF. God. Going to be so
strike
annoying.
One.
They win CONCACAF, they win Leagues Cup again, they win MLS Cup, Shield, maybe they don't care, who knows. You could also tell me that it's a tire fire, right? Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility. A bunch of 35 plus
efficient and warm
aging soccer players are not able to carry a team. There's, you know, issues because it's maybe not a cohesive unit. I mean, you've got disparity of like what people are making and the experience they're from and all these other things. And like, maybe it all goes wrong. And I think this competition is going to be the first example, because based off what we're seeing right now, I'd be shocked if Messi's like playing early on. So maybe playing against Nashville, especially if they have MLS games around that and it becomes a midweek situation, how much are you going to stress him early? So I think you're going to start to learn, like, how does this team look without him? Can they win without him? Who sort of carries the torch? If he doesn't play, does Suarez play? Or is it like a whole different team of like Campagna and Gressel and you play through them and Robert Taylor and all those things? So I think we're going to learn a lot about that. And Miami are kind of one of those teams where like the range is massive. But the idea of like them going to Monterrey in the quarterfinals and potentially playing Tigres in a semifinal, I think that's where this competition for me, like one of my earliest memories of this competition is Tornsten Frings playing at Real Esteli in Nicaragua and like walking on a turf field. And you're like, what is Tornsten Frings thinking right now? And then they cut to him and his face is like,
another goal?
Where that's definitely am what he's thinking.
Yeah. I'll never forgive him. I'll never forgive him, Gus. How dare you bring
me
him
neither
on the show? If we're picking a favorite, if you all had to choose right now, Liga MX, we're five games in. We've got Monterrey on the top, Club America, and then Tigres. I'm assuming we would expect one of those three to be in the final if all goes according to plan. Joe, do you have a favorite for this overall competition as we record?
I do, not because I'm so sure they're the best team in the region, but I think they're one of the absolute best teams in the region, and they're on the good side of the bracket, or I guess the bad side, depending on your perspective. Club America, like they ditch all of the top MLS teams, they ditch the other top two, you know, other top two members of the top three in Liga MX. Like Club America have the top end talent, they do absolutely every year, and they're on the right side of this thing. I think they should absolutely be the favorites. Will they 100%. Win? Probably not, but yeah.
There's not another team on their side of the bracket that's a favorite. So, like, if you're set up in a situation where everyone else has to play each other for a chance to play you, and, like, your worst-case scenario is going to Alajuelense or maybe going to Philadelphia, that's not that bad for a team that just won a Liguilla against Tigres in, like, the highest pressure moments in front of a combined 200,000 fans over the course of a week. Like, this is a battle-tested team. It's a team that cohesively knows who they are right now. They've got an obvious match winner in Julian Quiñones. They've played in continental competition a ton. They have experience. They have a bunch of players in the team who have come from other clubs where they've won this tournament or have pushed in Leagues Cup or whatever. They seem ready. The only curveball in all of that is there's a decent chance that they're going to play Chivas in the round of 16 and a rivalry match, right? Like the emotions of something like that, I think, start to come out of the logic of like they are clearly a better team than Chivas and the chance for a slip up. And, you know, it's going to be Chicharito against the Dos Santos and like all that stuff, which I think is going to be a whole sideshow that could throw them off.
The disrespect towards Forge FC right now is
don't
really
get me started, because you don't want to go down that road, because I will go the full depth with you.
You are correct. I don't want to go down that road. What I do want to do is take a rapid break, and we'll be back to talk about some MLS moves that have happened since last we talked. Back soon. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Gentlemen, it's time to talk about moves that have happened. Joe, you said offseason has been a blink, which I understand. At the same time, we haven't had, I feel like, a ton of the moves that maybe we expected. Is that a thing that you expect to happen sort of in rapid order, or is it going to be a slow trickle of transfers as we get into the start of the season?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. We're still sort of waiting on some of these teams to really make their moves. Like LAFC have a couple of DP slots open. The Galaxy are still trying to figure out what to do with their third DP spot. The Fire are you know, have already agreed to, according to Tom and maybe some others as well, to signing a new record deal for a number nine. Like FC Dallas have signed Peter Musa as a nine. So there's stuff happening. Mm-hmm. Like, things are picking up, I think. But this is not unusual for MLS in that the season kicks off, but the transfer window is still open for another, 2 months? So we're still going to see moves trickle in as the year gets going, but we are starting to see some real cash get thrown around.
We're at this point of the year where if you didn't already have the move ready when last season ended, you're potentially waiting to see how the European transfer window closed and like who's available, who maybe got pushed out and didn't get moved. So I think that's where this offseason became, where other offseasons, sometimes it's like these teams have ID'd their four guys and they're going for them immediately and they're announced on December 1st and can't be signed until January 1st. And then there are other years where a lot of the moves happen like this, where, like, I think Benfica looked around late and was like, oh, either we're bringing someone in that Peter Musa won't play, or the move in Europe's not going to happen that we expected, and MLS is the window open. And often you see good players come to MLS because it's one of the better windows that's left open later on. Joe, let me ask you, do you care? Do you trust teams more if they make the move preseason, summer? Do you think the market is better in the summer and you prefer it? Like, as you look at the teams that haven't made the moves, does it matter to you?
I think the market is better in the summer, but I would still rather, if I'm an MLS fan of my team, I want them to be ready. Like, I want them to be ready to actually play soccer when the season starts. And NYCFC last year, for like the best example of that, a team that had the talent in most spots to go and compete for a trophy. They didn't sign a number nine. Santi Rodriguez and James Sands weren't ready and back in for the start of the season. And they have their worst ever season in 8 seasons in Major League Soccer. So I don't want to be that. Even recognizing that smart soccer people, Garth Lagerwey is probably at the top of this list, typically do some of the most important business in the summer. And this year he's going to be forced to do that if Almada goes. But like, I want my team to be as close to 100% ready for the start of the year as possible. I don't want to be sitting around in my hands and like hoping that we get through the first chunk of the season with like some wins, but also at the same time, MLS is way too forgiving with the regular season. They have made that matter as little as possible, which is a reason why I would go all in on CONCACAF Champions Cup and why I would try to be ready for other competitions as well. But in general, like, I want my team to win games, and you need your good players in town to win games.
Isn't the forgiving thing with CONCACAF funny because all the teams that go to a CONCACAF final like don't make the playoffs? Right? Seattle, TFC, LAFC. Like, we've seen it a lot now, and I agree with you. Which is like, try really hard in this thing the first half, reset in the summer. You probably will have an international layoff most seasons because of Copa America, Gold Cup, World Cup, whatever it is. And then come back and just put like the rubber to the road and make the playoffs. We have seen that it hasn't worked, but it's an interesting calculus, I'll tell you, for a lot of front offices of like $2 million less in the summer or a better player in the summer or being ready and having the player in preseason. There isn't a clear answer across every team and every situation.
I don't think I've ever been more pro they need to change the schedule than I am after this conversation. I mean that sincerely. Like, really, with the, to your point, the amount of calculations front offices have to do the amount of decisions that have to be made that are sort of like, we'll wait till the summer and see what we can do. We're not like, we don't want to go for this guy. He didn't get the move, but he's going to be too expensive. It just feels like calculations that don't put clubs into ideal positions to bring in fans, to bring in supporters, to generate interest. Like, you can announce a player in January who's arriving in the summer. Is that going to sell season tickets? I don't know, unless it's Lionel Messi. And even then, that they're going to wait till the summer. So it seems like an odd conundrum for MLS, but I guess that's what MLS does. They do the odd conundrum well, I guess.
I think
I'm saying.
We're going to have to follow up after Independiente Kai has to play in snow on Gillette Stadium in about 3 weeks. So then we can reassess this.
All right, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Then let me ask this, Joe, about Peter Musa. Is this a things can be two things sort of transfer in that it does feel like he was very much surplus to requirement at Benfica? They'd brought in a couple players in January. They already had plenty of attackers. He felt like one that they were expecting to move. But then for FC Dallas, it's a record signing. They're bringing in a player from a high-profile club where he has scored goals. He has had success. Does this feel like a situation in which it's the club – where he comes from, wanted him gone, we're happy to see him gone, but it's also FC Dallas making a sizable move.
Yep, I think that this move absolutely checks both of those boxes. Benfica have talent coming out the wazoo, right? Like, they don't need all of the players in their squad that they have at any given time, and Dallas wanted a number 9 to move Jesus Ferreira out of that role, right? They're not married to Jesus Ferreira being around forever if the right offer comes in, as evidenced by the Moscow bid sort of happening and them being fine with it and MLS eventually squashing that. But like, they want Ferreira to be able to operate more underneath. And Nico Estevez wants to change his system to reflect that this year, which meant bringing in a high-profile number 9 if they could find the right guy. And they think in Peter Musa that they found the right guy. So I'll run through the scouting report. And then I have some cause for concern a little bit with this move, but I still think in general it is a useful move that will make Dallas better. But I'll get to that in a second. The scouting report on this guy, 25 years old, Croatian striker, has a few caps with Croatia. He's coming in for like an $11 million fee, somewhere in that range. It's a record deal for Dallas. He was absurdly productive as a super sub for Benfica over the last 18 months. So he was playing for them. It's not like he was this nobody on the bench. Like, he was playing for one of the better teams in Europe. He scored 12 goals in just under 1,200 minutes and had some really sharp underlying numbers as well in the last year and a half with Benfica. 12 goals in 1,200 minutes is absurd. Like, scoring a goal basically every game is something that does not happen in this game. And that is sort of my cause for concern slightly here. He was coming in as a super sub. Benfica are a really good team in a way that Dallas are not relative to their competition. Like, Musa's coming off the bench, and he's having tons of opportunities at goal. He's getting really good service from his elite teammates. He's having a chance to go against lower quality defenses in favorable game situations. He's not going to have that same luxury with Dallas. He's going to be starting. He's going to be playing from the opening whistle. That changes the calculus. It changes what he's going to do. Musa doesn't like to play with his back to goal. He's pretty good at bringing others into the game when he can face forward, but he's not super strong. He's not super physical, despite being a tall guy. He likes to get in the box. He likes to sort of find and manipulate defenders and get into space inside the 18. He's really, really good at that stuff. But with Benfica, he was in a situation where that was basically all he had to do. He would play a couple of nice flicks and tricks. He would get in the box and he would score goals. It's going to be different in Dallas. So on the whole, I think this move clearly makes Dallas better. I think between the Benfica tax and like the fact that, you know, he was in a really weird situation that's not replicable in other spots coming off the bench for a really good team, I think between those things, we should temper our expectations. But expecting this guy to score, you know, 15, 16 goals in MLS this year after he had a pretty good season with Boavista, was pretty good in a couple of other places as well earlier in his career, like, that seems entirely fair. And I think the hope for Dallas is that it makes Ferreira better along the way by adding another real danger in the attack.
To your point about the situation at Benfica, Joe, that is a thing that stood out to me watching him, is that he had all the hallmarks of a player who was ridiculously short of confidence and was maybe not happy in that situation. In the most recent games that I saw, in the footage that I saw, he has a couple shots that go right to the goalkeeper. He has a couple shots that go wide. And every time it's just like head hangs, turns around, walks away. It's very much a player who just looks like it's not working, the vibe is off, whatever it may be. And that does factor into my sort of understanding of him as a player, that if it is maybe the wrong place, wrong time, getting that move to a place where he is going to be the marquee player, the marquee signing, the big name player who's expected to score goals, I'm interested to see what that does to him in terms of his form, in terms of how he plays, if we see a next level. I also would add, I fully agree with you that I think he is meant to be a complementary player to Jesus Ferreira. A few different outlets had it as he is the replacement for Jesus Ferreira there was the interest. They are not similar in any way. So that doesn't make any sense to me. But Ferreira dropping a little bit deeper and the two of them playing like sort of similar to maybe like what they had with Ricardo Pepi, like at like North Texas or something like that, that seems like a much more usable combination of the two that has me excited to watch FC Dallas. So I am very much pro this move. David Goss holds his hands up an exclamation. Goss, is that what it takes for us to be excited about FC Dallas?
That's I don't know, but they got you there. And that's the miracle of miracles. So that's what they were working on. No, I think, you know, from the little I've watched, I think pretty much the same as everything you guys said. He is a player, it seems, that is not amazing at anything, but is good at almost everything. I think that's an easy way to fit in. I also look at a team now where you have a Golden Boot leader from 2 years ago who will play underneath you, a guy in Paul Arriola who scored 10 goals his first year at FC Dallas, and potentially Bernard Camungo playing off you. So I think not only do you bring in a guy who, like Joe said, can score 15 or 16 goals this year, which is a massive help, but now you start to even things out, and I think you bring back some of the attacking quality for Paul Arriola and Camungo because the pressure is not on them. They're going to start getting the chances that fit their game a little bit better, especially Arriola, right? We saw 2 years ago he could be elite as a back post crasher in moments when the ball and focus goes away from him. But last year, there was no one to focus on. You had two center backs, track Jesus Ferreira, and then a fullback and a D-mid could deal with Paul Arriola on the far post. I think that opens up a little bit more with either Moussa's quality with the ball at his feet and the attention he'll take. Similar for Camunga. So I think on top of getting the quality of this player, it now fits in a way where you've got Jesus Ferreira playing a little bit deeper. He can touch the ball more. You can start to create more chances overall for everyone on the team. And that's the point for Dallas. Very often when you look at moves, it's like who's in, who's out. This is just a pure addition. They have not lost anyone from what was a struggling attack last year. They've just injected $10 million in a Benfica / Croatian international center forward to their team. And so that should all be positives for a group that was one of the better defensive teams last year and has a lot returning.
So are we giving this a tentative, hesitant thumbs up, this transfer?
I'm giving it a thumbs up. I just don't think the size of the thumb will quite match up with the size of the transfer fee, if that makes sense.
I asked that to then ask Joe, what are you giving Matty Peltola to DC United? Let me ask you, actually, before we get into the thumbs up, thumbs down grade, what would you have said were the areas of need based on Trelle Sane being the manager and the roster as it existed?
Most positions, I think, for DC United, they could reasonably try to upgrade on, right? Look at goalkeeper, I look at, you know, pretty much every spot on the back line that doesn't belong to Aaron Herrera right now. Click is sort of the guy in midfield, and I think you want Ted Kudipietro to get minutes this year. And Benteke, obviously, up top. Every other spot, so what does that leave, like 6 or 7 outfield spots or total spots in this team? I think you could reasonably try to upgrade on. It's going to take time for DC, and I think they sort of realize that. And you can tell that tone from them by the transfers that they made and the fact that the biggest moves of the offseason are not on the personnel side. They're in the front. They're on the front office side and on the coaching side to bring in Ali Mackay and to bring in Troy Lesane as the chief soccer officer and manager, respectively. Like, they're trying to get younger, fresh ideas into the club outside of the field, and I think they're hoping to stabilize on the field to maybe not pick up the spoon this year and to try to systematically build and add talent to this team. That's where they are. Like, that's where this team is. The third, yeah. I'm sorry, Taylor, for all this. By the way, it doesn't bring me joy to dump on DC United or Manchester United, but here we are. I think it brings Ryan joy.
It definitely brings you joy to jump on Manchester United. I refuse to accept that, but go ahead.
At times, perhaps. Maybe. But with DC, like, you can sort of tell the tone of their season by the third DP that they made. They went out and signed Matty Peltola, defensive midfielder, like 21-year-old Finnish international as a young DP.
With limited profile, who doesn't score goals and was available on a free? What are you talking about, Joe? That's what everyone was clamoring for.
And I don't know the contract, right? So you're talking about being available as a, you know, as a on a free transfer. Like, transfers are brought into the salary budget charge. So without that, like, is this guy really making $1.7 million? Not a chance, right? I'll be shocked if he is. So I don't think he has to occupy this DP spot forever. But, like, they announced him as a young DP. Like, this is their third DP along with Benteke and Click. And Peltola is not a guy who's going to elevate this team from being, oh, no, we're in 10th in the East and we want to climb into one of the wild card spots, That's not his game. Like, he doesn't have any real top-end playing experience. He's 21 years old. He either plays as a six or as a fullback. Like, he's not the missing piece to make this team suddenly into a contender. It's another sign that DC are willing to be patient, and that's not going to be easy for fans, but willing to be patient inside the club to try and stabilize before they really go out and acquire a ton more talent.
Joe, my first thought in watching him was, this is going to be very, very harsh. I have a certain feeling here about Matty Peltola, I guess. Basically, Brad Smith, if Brad Smith were 21 years old, is about what I was seeing. He's left-footed. He can play in midfield. I saw him playing a lot of left-back, which I think also threw me off because they listed him as a midfielder. He can play there. He has played there, but seems to be more defense-minded. So I guess if it's a defender who can also play in midfield and be sort of a defensive midfielder, maybe that makes more sense, as long as they're not trying to build him as an exciting midfield attacker or something like that.
No, and I don't think they have, right? Like, you go and watch him play, he's just not that guy. And I don't think DC United really are trying to convince anybody that they are that guy. Like, they've gone full ghost mode after hiring their couple of big, you know, off-field pieces this offseason. Now they're off in Saudi Arabia with no one talking about what they're doing or what's going on. And everybody's just sort of on the same page with DC. I think that includes DC United about, we know we're probably not going to be really good this year. Like, us being good involves a lot of things, a lot of ifs becoming yeses this season. So I don't think anybody should or does feel particularly good about this team. Could they make the playoffs? It's Major League Soccer. Absolutely they could. Are they going to win a trophy this year? I don't think anybody's under that assumption.
Okay, let me give counter or devil's advocate here a little bit.
Excited for this, guys.
Finnish advocate, I believe it's called.
Would you like some reindeer with that? Yes, please. Thank you.
I think two of the biggest acquisitions in MLS over the last 3 or 4 years have been Obinna Nwobodo and Andres Kubas. So it's a position that if you hit, you can change the reality of your team pretty quickly. You can change the reality for your attacking players. I would also throw in, we've seen the New York Red Bulls spend a lot at players of similar profile in a similar role. And that's not Troy Lesane's background, but that's where he came in to MLS through. We saw Drew Yearwood brought in. We saw the amount they gave up for Frankie Amaya. And so I think you're
Nailed
looking
it.
At what?
Like, both, like, were the, are those positive examples?
No,
of signings,
those are both bad.
Okay,
but you can start to see, in terms of building your game model and trying to do it in year one and trying to make a difference, where this could fit. And then the last piece would be, if he's on a borderline DP contract, you bring him in now as a DP, it opens up the U22 roster spots, and then you can downgrade him in the future as you can amortize whatever you brought him in for or change things. And we have seen, not from the Finnish league, but players come from Finland that have been successful, Robin Lud and Alex Ring, obviously the two big ones, but they were 5 or 6 years older and had played across Europe before they came to MLS. So it feels like DC is trying to hit before he costs $3 or $4 million on this acquisition. And they're trying to do it in a moment where they have probably a little bit of an opening because they already have Benteke and Click locked in, and they're not going for the high-end DPs that are going to change their reality. If you get a guy in central midfield who can cover ground, who can help protect a back line a little bit, and who can help facilitate possession, it can take you from 10 to 7 pretty quickly in MLS.
Yeah.
And that's the reality for DC United. So I can understand worrying about this because we have no confidence in DC to sign players from overseas that we haven't watched for 15 years, like Wayne Rooney, Benteke, and Click. And we have no confidence in a player coming straight from Finland into this team. In terms of the profile, there's a decent amount that makes sense right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I don't think the Peltola, Kubas, Nwobodo comp works because, they're the same position, but they're also 4 years different from when they were arriving in the league in terms of age. But I take your point, Goss. Like, having a solid piece at the base of your midfield does almost always make the pieces around them perform at a higher level. So I think DC going in and trying to find that player, accepting that, hey, you know, we can give him real minutes this year behind another very good midfielder in Mateusz Click. He's going to grow, and we really like his profile. Like, I think Ali Mackay seems like a smart dude coming over from Nashville. So I'm not condemning this signing, but like I said earlier, it just crystallizes DC's expectations for themselves. Like, they are not trying to swing for the fences. They're not going out there and trying to break the bank on a third DP. They're going and saying, hey, maybe this makes us incrementally better this year, and we hope it makes us 2 to 3 spots in the standings better next year as we continue to rebuild around our DPs. But like, you know, DC have made it very clear what we should expect from them in 2024.
DC United all-time DPs, Luciano Emilio, Marcelo Gallardo, Bronco Boscovich, Dwayne DiRosario, Hamdi Salihi, Rafael, Eddie Johnson, Fabian Espindola, Paul Arriola, Wayne Rooney, Lucas Rodriguez, Edson Flores, Taxi Fontas, Victor Paulson, Christian Benteke, Matthias Glick, and now Matty Peltola. There is a hit rate in there. I'm not sure it's a strong hit rate, but you know, you never know. We'll see what happens.
It is a used car lot of designated player signings. It is, for the majority, guys who were DPs in name only,
yeah,
or DPs because they thought they had to sign one. What's funny about that is, if we go all the way back, Luciano Emilio was like not the profile I think that MLS had in mind when they created the rule. And he was the first one to break the mold of like, find a good soccer player wherever they are and it'll make your team better. And then DC doubled back on themselves and were like, no. They have to play in Europe. They have to play for a national team. We have to try and appeal to the different markets in DC to come watch this team. And they have failed since then or been super cheap and gotten like the cheapest possible DP. The only people who have been cheaper with DPs are Houston and Chicago over the course of the rule.
Luciano Emilio. I love him so much.
Great soccer player.
Oh,
great,
yeah.
Team.
Still good. Still good. I played a pickup charity game with him.
No, you didn't.
Vegan ball. Oh, yeah. The only one who took it, he didn't take it that seriously. Aleko Eskandarian took it seriously and scored some goals. And I will say, if I wanted to be a little bit more positive, I think you all have nailed it, that he's a very young player who was, I believe, done with his contract with HJK. And I don't think that was out of contract, like, wasn't good enough. I think that was out of contract, wanted to find the club that could allow him to step up in profile and then probably make that next jump after that. And so in that way, seen from that perspective, you could argue it's a strong move for DC United to get him in, for him to have a platform, for them to build around him a little bit, but then also be okay with selling him if the right offer comes in. I think all of that does make sense. I just am skeptical about DC United because everything we've talked about every single time we talk about DC United. Let's stop talking about them. A few more moves to be discussed. One more break. We'll get back to doing that very soon.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Up next, we have a player who I texted Joe Lowry about because I wasn't that excited. Joe texted me back. I watched some more, and now I'm slightly more excited. That's my billing to talk about Agustin Ojeda to NYCFC, New York City FC, is I believe what I'm supposed to call them now, from Racing Club for $7 million. Joe, you stoked? You excited about this one?
Yeah, I am, within the context that NYCFC tend to hit on these young South American attackers. Like, that's their whole thing, kind of, and a lot of them turn out to be pretty darn good. Ojeda looks raw. Still, he's just 19 years old, and that was a big part of the difference, Taylor, as we were texting a bit. You know, the difference in allowable and acceptable mistakes when you're 19.
I forgot
and
that
when
was
you're
the key
when you're 21.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge difference. So to still be 19, just sort of starting to break into the Argentine top flight, now he's in Major League Soccer, or he's going to be. Trey Fillmore and the outfield, who do a fantastic job, the outfield, of covering NYCFC. Trey Fillmore wrote a scouting report and sort of a whole piece on Ojeda. And there was one line in there that really, really stuck out to me. And I think this describes Ojeda's game pretty darn well. He said, Agustin scurries like a toddler that just nabbed his mother's iPhone. Arms wide, hunched over, each step pounding the ground. I love that line from that piece from Trey. It's really, really good. Go check it out. Go subscribe to the outfield, all that stuff. He is a vertical, like, crafty, dribbly, right-footed winger who likes to get to the end line, likes to be on the ball, and drive forward very, very quickly. Like, that's his thing. And NYCFC need more of that. I think in Hannes Wolf, they got another more direct player coming over from Europe with a pretty good pedigree. Like, they've gotten stronger and I think a little more diversified in their attack ahead of 2024. And most importantly for NYCFC, it seems like they're on track to get these players into town early on instead of doing what they did last year. We mentioned that earlier on the show. So Ojeda is still super raw, has a ton of room to grow. I don't think he's going to play a massive role if he hits 1,000 minutes this year. Maybe that's about right, 1,000, 1,500 minutes in MLS. That feels right on the money. He's not going to come in and be an every game starter. But, I mean, they paid up for him, and I think they, CFG, expect him to be a nice young piece that they can flip for something.
Gosh, it was a strange thing. I texted Joe about this, as I said, and then Joe said, I mean, for a 19-year-old, he's raw, but I think there's talent there. And I had in my head that he was 21 for some reason, and weirdly, that distinction was enough for me to be like, oh, okay,
totally.
Well then, yeah, no, he's fine. Because he is definitely raw from what I watched. He can definitely hit a pass. He has a few that I saw where he's threading the needle, splitting defenders. He can take people on. He has some dribbles. Then I saw several where he runs straight into a defender or dribbles out of bounds. But I think he's raw. He's very energetic. He brings a lot of intensity. Definitely will press. Definitely will go hound a defender and force mistakes. But as Joe said, not the finished product. So I think it's a smart signing if he's not being relied on to carry that attack. It doesn't sound like he will be, though, with some of the other signings they have pursued and are currently pursuing.
Yeah, they've made 19 signings this offseason. So everyone's going to get an opportunity, I think, to fit in. A lot of what I've seen is similar to you, of like willing to take a ton of people on, successful not that often, but that comes with time and strength and all of that. And I think NYCFC specifically have been successful in bringing in, I think, of Gabi Pereira, Talos Magno when he first got there, Thiago Andrade for a little bit as well. Of course, Tati, who they shifted from a tricky winger into a scrappy center forward. But they've been successful, I think, in getting players like that space. Like, one of the things NYCFC does so well, even on the smallest field in the league, is making the field feel big. And they're able to get 1v1 players into situations that make them comfortable, where they can be game changers on the edge of the box, take your guy on, get to the end line, cut it back, cut inside, get a shot away. Of course, coming all the way down from Pep Guardiola and the CFG system, they're very good at helping those players, and they're very good at IDing those players. And one of the things that CFG has, that a few other clubs have, is their teams play against most opponents. So when they go scout a player, if it's not in the CFG family, like, they have a club that is playing against them. They have coaches that are working around those players or have worked with those players. It's why I think their hit rate has been so high, especially out of Uruguay and Argentina, where for other people, it's a bit more of a mystery. So I think there's a ton of confidence. And then you add in, they've signed a Serbian center forward. They have Bakrar coming back. So you've got players who can put the ball in the back of the net that you believe in around players like this, who then they can set up, takes a little bit of pressure off. It feels like NYCFC has reloaded. There's not a ton of experience in the group. I'm not super worried about that because I think there's so much talent that they can overcome. But there is not a Maxi Morales. Even Tati, the year they made MLS Cup, had been in the league and been around the team for 3 years at that point. They don't exactly have that guy. But in terms of being better than last year, they're leaps and bounds past where they were a year ago.
I think that's true. Gus, you mentioned the Serbian number 9. Not officially signed yet, but it very much seems like that deal is happening. Jovan Mijatovic. I am fully on the Jovan Mijatovic hype train, and I just want to plant my flag now. Quick scouting report. Rangy, left-footed number 9, who can also maybe play as a second forward or in the half spaces or even a little deeper as maybe a number 10. He was playing for Red Star Belgrade, which is one of the best youth product producers in the world. 18 years old, apparently, Taylor, and I know this will hook you, Bayer Leverkusen were legit interested in signing him, and it didn't work out. I don't know if they wouldn't meet the evaluation or what, but City Football Group very much wanted Mijatovic, and they went out and got him. And there were questions, is this going to be Man City signing him because that's how much they believe in him and loaning him to NYCFC, or is it just going to be a permanent deal for NYCFC? And it sounds like it's going to be the latter there. 8 goals in just over 600 minutes for Red Star in Serbia's top flight this season. He is putting the ball in the back of the net a lot. And Paul Harvey, credit to Paul, who's done some work for us over at backfield and the outfield as well. He tossed out a Wayne Rooney comp for Mijatovic. I think that is really, really good. He's not short. Wayne Rooney's not really short either. He's a little squatter, Mijatovic. Strong. I think he's 5'10". So he's like average height, even for a soccer player. That's pretty average. And he's just like a strong kid. Like, he is going to bowl right through you. He's really hard to knock off the ball. Good vision, good passing range, hunts for the ball in the box. Not every transfer hits. Most transfers don't, and most transfers involving young players don't seem to hit. But crossover, the European clubs that were interested in him, his status as a Red Star player, and the fact that NYCFC do seem to hit on a lot of these signings, I am very, very excited to see this kid in MLS for as long as he's going to be here.
I'm Joe Lowry. I'm 6 feet tall.
Yeah, Joe's really going through it on the height experience here.
I'm also 5'10".
Are you really? I think you're above 6.
Yeah, Graham and Ryan are way taller than me. You and I are like about the same height. And
Yeah. Anyway. I got up to 5'11 and 3/4 once, and that was
proud
it.
Of you.
That was it. Been shrinking ever since.
Your tiptoes really putting in work there.
You indeed. You all have talked about a lot of players for NYCFC. I am excited to talk about Hannes Wolf for a moment, a player that I did not know had made that transfer. I'm very confused what happened to his career at Gladbach. He has not played, I believe, a single minute for them this entire season, which has not been a good season, so maybe that's part of it. But he is a player who is Austrian, came through the Salzburg system, I think other youth clubs before that, but then Salzburg to Leipzig, then goes to Gladbach, then has been kind of all over the place, but is only 24 years old, and for a period of time felt like he could be a critical player for both Austria and Gladbach and maybe get a bigger move from there, and then it just kind of doesn't connect. It feels like what he needs is a place where he can land, get comfortable again, play some good football, and then see how it goes from there. I feel like this is a really smart signing and a player that could be really influential, but at the same time, they got him for free, I believe. So even if he doesn't hit, it's not that big of a hit overall. It feels like a really smart bit of business amongst all the other business that New York has done. So credit to them for that. At least New York have actually signed players as opposed to, say, the Blackburn Rovers. Should we talk about Duncan Maguire for a moment? At time of recording, he has not actually moved, though he is still in England, because Blackburn not good at paperwork. Is that about where we are, Joe?
I think so. Like, I'm pretty sure that's where we've been. So Tom and some other folks at The Athletic have been all over this story. Duncan Maguire was heading to Blackburn. Blackburn, who are in the championship right now, had agreed to a deal with Orlando City. Duncan Maguire hopped on a flight. Then all of a sudden, Indian ownership comes in and says, like, no, actually, we don't have the money for Duncan Maguire, so the deal's off. Maguire still stays in England for a little bit, and eventually Orlando and Blackburn come to a different agreement. It's a loan agreement with a loan fee and a hefty transfer option to buy baked into that deal as well. And everybody's like, okay, sounds good. Let's do this. Duncan Maguire is going to be a Blackburn player. And then there's some sort of mystical administrative error that pushed the paperwork past the deadline over in England. And now Blackburn are in the process of appealing this transfer, hoping that Duncan Maguire is going to get to play. It sounds like Thursday is the day that we're actually going to learn what the final ruling is. Till, I know you're skeptical that this deal gets over the line now, and yeah. I'm guessing that's probably fair given that Blackburn were late in filing this stuff, which means he was not registered before the transfer deadline.
For the third time in 18 months. This is the Correct. Third time this has happened with Blackburn.
Yeah, happened so with Luis O'Brien. Like, it's this is a pattern for them. They seem like a very poorly run club. To be honest, I see where Duncan Maguire is coming from. He doesn't make very much money for an MLS player. He makes like $60,000, $70,000 after being drafted from Creighton last year by Orlando. He wants to get paid, man, and I get it. Like, you're only a professional athlete for so long. At the same time, Blackburn feels like just an absolute mess of a club, both on and off the field. They're not a good team in the championship. I'm sympathetic to him wanting to go, and that's probably still the right thing to do from a maximizing your earnings perspective. But also, another season or half season in Orlando probably wouldn't be the worst thing either. I don't know, Goss, where are you on this?
It wouldn't help that it sounds like Orlando may have signed the replacement for Duncan Maguire, and then he would come back in Luis Muriel. And if it's a half season with the idea that he's going to go away, okay, fine. Muriel's going to have to find his feet. He has to get involved. You'd assume Duncan Maguire would be the starter, at least in CONCACAF competition and at the beginning. And that's the only thing I think that trips it up. Because if not, if you're Orlando, you're like, we did everything we could to try and get you where you wanted to be, and now you're stuck here. So, like, show everyone how good you are. Maybe we get a better move at the end of this, not to a team that doesn't know how to click the next button or the send button or whatever, doesn't pay for internet. We could go ahead and send you to, like, a real club that has people. So that would be the possibility. There are, I think, going to be other rumors now coming around. Like, if Orlando has replaced him, does he play for a different MLS team? Which is a little bit mind-blowing to think about. And maybe it's not long enough of a time for that to happen. But it would be really interesting to see, like, what the knock-on effect of this is. And it's unfortunate for him, of course.
Yeah. Like, that's the big thing for me. Yeah. Because did you read the thing about how he had two different offers and two different cars, basically?
I did not read the car thing.
So he's in Manchester awaiting like the finalization of this move, and it's Blackburn, and then it's Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday, very aggressive in their pursuit as well. They are second bottom in the championship, though, but they both clubs sent cars, apparently, to the hotel. He ends up just getting his own taxi with an agent, and they go to Blackburn. But Blackburn had prepared a whole presentation on how they create better goal-scoring opportunities, how they create better clear-cut chances, how he'll have more long-term success there. And he ends up choosing Blackburn over Sheffield, but I just have such sympathy for him now because he has to be wondering, if I'd gone the other way, maybe I'd get relegated, but maybe I'm the one to save Sheffield Wednesday, and either way, I would actually be registered as a Wednesday player. I do have some sympathy for Blackburn, certain Blackburn personnel, because it feels like there was a lot of effort and scouting and thought put into this signing. It wasn't just a panic buy. It was very much a player that Blackburn had evaluated, identified as being a player that could contribute both now and in the long term. And then it all falls through because they fail to file paperwork for the third time.
Do you feel bad for Blackburn, who shot themselves in the foot?
I feel bad for the personnel at Blackburn who did their jobs.
Got it.
And
yeah,
I do not feel bad for the people who did not. And it seems like there is a footballing department that was doing its job, and then a front office department controlled by the Venkies that was doing the opposite of that. Some speculation that they deliberately messed up the paperwork because they didn't have the money and this was a way to get around that. That has been scoffed at, that has been dismissed, but it is still speculation that exists. Either way, I think Duncan Maguire, I can't see them deciding, oh, you made a mistake? Well, fine, you can transfer a player after the window is closed. I think that's not really a thing that happens, so I do feel like he goes back to Orlando.
Also,
and then they try to find another buyer.
What's the appeal? Hey, we made this mistake. It'll never happen again, except for the two times we did it over the last year. And I think the scary thing for Duncan Maguire is like he doesn't have a body of work. So like if he sits out for 6 months now, which I don't think will happen because he's an Orlando player, the MLS window's open, like there's no issues there. But if that were to happen, now you've been a professional for 18 months and you've only played 12 of them, and he wasn't a starter the first half of last year. So now you're trying to get teams to come in on you basically on about a half season's worth of work, which is not a lot to convince a team to fork over multi-million dollars. So I think that's a little bit worrying for him, as it should be for Orlando. And that's kind of what's tough with some of these moments of, like you said, like making that decision, door you choose, where you go. I mean, we've seen for so many players make the wrong move, and look at what you're talking about with Hans Wolf. Look at what we're talking about with Gio Reyna right now. Like all these spots of like, what's the decision for a young player, and you only have so much time to go on it. But I think it's funny. I mean, I think Tom was the one who tweeted out about a potential loan inside of MLS. Like, who wouldn't want it? So now all of these teams who haven't made their DP center forward acquisitions are like, oh, this guy scored 15 goals last year. That could be fun.
Where would he have the biggest impact, do you think?
I mean, Cincinnati would be mad at another player coming in that front line, but I also don't know how they have the room or like what the contract stuff is on all that stuff. But I mean, although, I think about them as needing that one more piece, maybe to get them back to where they were.
He's only on like $70,000, right?
He doesn't make a lot of money.
True. Okay, yeah, right.
I don't have a ton of confidence in Dejan Jovalich as a starter for the LA Galaxy. I know Joe's already given them MLS Cup this year, but I worry about that position. Yeah. So that's one where he could have two DP wingers and Ricky Puig around him and just be a pure finisher.
Guys, we missed it. It's Colorado, obviously. Fringe USMNT guys everywhere in Colorado these days. Come on now. That's the move.
Joe, any other moves that you wanted to shout out while we're here? We're going long, but that's what we do. Do you want to praise Charlotte at all for clearing the decks, as you've long been advocating?
Shout out to Charlotte. Getting the job done. Absolutely love it from Charlotte FC. Karol Swiderski over to Hellas Verona in Serie A on a loan with an option to buy. That opens up his DP spot. Not every DP going out on loan does that, but this move does from Charlotte. That's not confusing at all, but it's good news for Charlotte FC fans. And then Kamil Jozwiak, one of the worst DPs in MLS history, is now over at the bottom of La Liga, or near the bottom of La Liga, with Granada. So they have now opened, Charlotte, two DP spots. Ambition has never been a problem. It has been talent identification and having any sort of uniform plan across the on-field and off-field elements of the club. Those things are issues, and I don't necessarily expect those to have changed. But even just getting two more bites of the apple, like, you might hit a good bite. You know, most of the apple might be rotten, but you might actually finally get to like a bite that you can tolerate. And maybe that's going to be this season for Charlotte. So that is real addition by subtraction. I don't think Swiderski was a bad player. But from the moment they brought in Enzo Capetti, he was redundant. Like, Swiderski, in my mind, is absolutely best as a number nine. And they said, nah, we don't really think you're a number nine. Let's go get Capetti, even though you were a double-digit goal scorer for us last year, and Capetti's underlying numbers in Argentina weren't very good. Like, let's go do that, and we'll move you around. And it just never worked. So I think Charlotte have absolutely gotten better by getting those guys off the team, now allowing themselves to have the opportunity to bring in two more players at some point before this primary window ends. I think they'll sign at least one DP in this window.
All the agents in the Champo in League One seeing Dean Smith with two open DP spots, rubbing their hands, baby. It is Christmas come late or early. I don't really know how you describe that. Can I steal one from Joe here and throw it out there? Diego Rubio.
Yeah.
Gus, can I tell you my thoughts on Diego Rubio? My personal thoughts, not influenced by anybody else. I think he fits on pretty much all the teams that had interest. He's so versatile. He can lead the line. He can stay high. He's creative in his finishing. He can finish with both feet, and he can also play make. I don't know if anyone has said that on, say, an MLS-centric podcast before, but that's how I feel.
Taylor, I appreciate you setting the conversation and not following it. I appreciate you being a leader and not a sheep.
Joe, I'm directly quoting David Goss from yesterday's show.
Yeah, I got that. Thank you. I think everybody was on board with that, Taylor, but thank you for explaining.
It was the blank stare to the camera that had me.
Once you got into the fifth compliment, I was like, that sounds familiar.
But yeah, let's talk about Rubio, shall we?
I agree with you, Taylor.
Oh, do you?
Like, curveball.
It would be weird if you didn't.
With what you just said, him and Nico Ladero were the two guys that I was playing the, like, where could they end up starting last October or September? And, like, as I have said, because of his versatility, he could fit anywhere. And it is shocking that it ended up being, it sounds like, a one-year deal, $350K for a guy who has shown he can be the best attacking player on a good team. Now, those Colorado teams were defensive-based, and so that wasn't exactly like he was playing like Lucho Acosta was last year, but we're talking about $350K for a guy who could, if healthy, be the center forward. And I think that's where the question marks fell for a lot of teams, was how healthy would he be? How big of a risk is it? What type of roster spot is he filling for you? That can you have cover for him? But Joe brought up FC Cincinnati. Like, if you could have brought him and Corey Barrett in to replace what you were getting from Brandon Vasquez plus, like, that sounds like an amazing move. I know Seattle wanted a sure thing with Musovski because Rui Diaz has been a question mark, but man, like, him playing off with Jordan Morris playing alongside him and Roldan, like, that team could be special. I just talked about the LA Galaxy as well. So great work from Austin, because it feels like for Austin, based off everything we're hearing from the new sporting director, like, they're not going to get work done. So they're going to have to either make moves in the summer or wait a full season. This is a stopgap move that if it hits, now all of a sudden you're looking at two or three of your attacking, you know, front four that are playing at a high level and are really dangerous and can at least carry you through to the summer while you figure out, okay, who are the guys we can rely on? How can we get the guys who are we're stuck on, like a Rigoni or a Redes, out of this team and bring in some quality to replace them?
I like both of these moves quite a bit. I think the Rubio move is super smart from Austin. Rodolfo Borrell came in to replace Claudio Reyna midway through last season as the sporting director after, well, you know, everything happened with Claudio Reyna and Greg Berhalter and their respective families. So I think that is still something that Austin fans have been waiting to pay off, right? Like, you bring in a sporting director, one of Pep's former assistant coaches, experience at Manchester City and Barcelona. You're waiting for the big name signings to start coming in, and they just haven't. And Rodolfo Borrell talked to Jeff Carlisle on ESPN and said basically, like, yeah, we've had players that we wanted and we just cannot get them. Like, that's the rough paraphrase there. And they're hoping that that's going to start really helping some moves come in to be able to actually snag some players off of their desired lists. But if you look at, in terms of intra-league moves, going out and snagging Diego Rubio in free agency, even though it's not really clear where he's going to play, like, I don't know exactly where he fits in this attack, because in Jossie Zardes, like, is he the nine or is Rubio going to be the nine? I think Rubio and Driussi maybe could work really well together, and I think Rubio is a better player at this point in his career than Jossie Zardes, but Zardes is also less injury-prone, right? So still plenty of questions for Austin, but I think this move is absolutely a step in the right direction, even if it is a small step.
And Joe, if I give you, let's say, 2 minutes to talk about LAFC and what they're doing, is that too much or not enough?
I think that's right about right.
All right.
Like, we're still waiting on the big DP signings for them. But they've made some fascinating moves in this offseason for me, and they've gone out and replaced Diego Palacios at left back with Omar Campos from Liga MX. 21-year-old, like, is regarded by some folks that I know as one of the better left backs in Liga MX, certainly one of the better young ones. So I think that's a move that LAFC fans should have some faith in. I don't think he pops when you watch him, really, but he looks like a fine option, and Palacios kind of was that guy who grew into being one of the better left backs in MLS. So I think there's some hope there. And then you look at a couple of young players that they've signed. Again, we're still waiting on the big moves, but Thomas Angel comes in, and he is this versatile left-footed forward, 20 years old from Colombia. He's a Colombian youth international, like, is somebody that LAFC really like and looks like a nice young piece in that attack. And then David Martinez, one of, as far as I can tell, the best prospects that Venezuela has right now. 17-year-old left-footed attacker, can play on the wing, can play as a number 10. I don't think he's going to play more than, I don't know, 800 minutes in MLS this year. Maybe that's even a bit high. I don't know what LAFC's plans are for him, but clearly they value him as a young talent. And from the tape that I've seen, he looks really, really fun. So he's still missing that pro experience. But I think generally speaking, it's hard to view all of those signings as anything but a positive for LAFC. The big question for them is just like, what's the top end of the roster going to look like? When are you going to get these pieces? Who are they going to be? You're running up real close to the start of your season and some useful games for this group. So still big question marks there. But again, I like the moves that LAFC are making.
Lewandowski, Joe. That's the way. Lewandowski.
Make it happen, man. Make it happen.
Gus, I'm looking at you. Make that move happen, okay?
I literally am getting coffee with him in like an hour.
There we go. See? I appreciate the muting and unmuting as well. What's going on with South Korea?
They've lost.
Oh.
Shockingly, Jurgen Klinsmann's team tripped on themselves for like the 15th time this tournament, and yet this time they didn't get a miracle in stoppage time.
Well, commiserations to South Korea supporters for that one, and I guess to Jurgen Klinsmann supporters if they still exist. David Goss, thank you so much for all of your work today. Very much appreciated, my friend.
Taylor, just check my mentions in 8 hours. You can see if Jurgen Klinsmann fans still exist.
I will do just that. Joe Lowry, thank you, my friend, for being our resident Jurgen Klinsmann stan, but also for your other contributions on this episode.
Right back at you, Taylor.
Listeners, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.